Welcome to ID the Future, the podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm Ray Bolin, your host today, and with me today is Dr. Howard Glicksman, the author of the multiple segment series on evolution news called The Designed Body. And today we're going to be looking at blood flow in the body. So welcome back, Doc.
Thanks a lot, Ray. Nice to be here.
Well, everyone listening knows that blood is important for life. It carries all the chemicals our cells need to live and work properly, and in some respects, we all understand that. The heart pumps blood through the circulatory system, and that basically is able to feed our cells for what they need, the nutrients, the oxygen, carry the waste and the carbon dioxide away. So really, what else do we need to know about blood flow and its connection with the origin of life?
That's a good question, Ray. And in answering that, I'd sort of like to make three main points. The first is that everything you just said is true. The heart has to pump enough blood to all the tissues and organs of the body to keep us alive. And the proof of this being that without enough blood going to any of the vital organs, like the heart, the lungs, or the brain, we die immediately. So the body's ability to control its blood flow is very important for life.
And second, so excuse me, Doc, you bring in this thing again about dying. You keep bringing that up.
Yeah, sorry about that, Ray. Yeah. Well, you know, it's the only proof because we said the neo-Darwinists tell us natural selection is working on death.
Mm-hmm.
In order for something not to reproduce, it has to die. So really it's very important to sort of understand, okay, what prevents death from occurring? And one of the things is the body making sure there's enough blood flow to all the major organs of the body. And the second thing is we have to remember that life is a dynamic process. So whether we're resting in bed or running around, you know, jumping up and down or doing cartwheels, standing on our heads, to be able to do these things, our body has to adjust the blood flow to the various tissues and organs involved. So what we're going to see is that to accomplish these feats, the body has to know how the laws of nature actually work.
Mm.
And finally, when it comes to the origin of life, it's not just about where all the parts might have come from or how they were assembled into different systems, as difficult as it is for us to understand that. It's also about how all of these systems actually work to do what they need to do well enough for us to survive. So by explaining how the body controls its blood flow so all of its cells get what they need exactly when they need it is just one way of seeing what it really took for the origin of human life.
It really is amazing. I'm looking forward to our conversation here today. I think all of us, including myself, have had this particular experience. If you've been sitting down for a while, or it might even be early in the morning or whatever, and you get up really quickly and suddenly you feel a bit dizzy. I assume this basically means that I'm not getting enough blood to my brain. So the fact that it usually goes away pretty quickly, for which we're all grateful, it must mean that my body has a way to react and fix that. So, and speaking of that, I wonder how gymnasts can do their routines as their heads are going up and down against and with gravity without passing out. I think about figure skaters and the twirls and the turning, and it just, how does all that work?
Well, Ray, that's a great question and really a good place to start about how the body controls blood flow. First, I need to point out that it does this in two main ways, okay? One works at the total body level, and that uses the sympathetic nervous system, which we're going to look at later.
Mm-hmm.
And the others do it at the local level of the organ itself. So when we're talking about the brain, when you're talking about getting up and standing up quickly or turning over and being on your head or doing a handstand, et cetera, in the brain, this local control of blood flow is called autoregulation because it lets the brain automatically regulate its blood flow no matter what the body's doing. But first, to understand how autoregulation works, we first have to look at blood flow and the laws of nature. So think about it, okay, Ray? When
mm-hmm.
If you roll a ball across a yard, what are the two main forces that affect how far it will go?
Well, you have to provide energy to put the ball in motion in the first place, and there's also the aspect of friction with gravity and so forth that applies to the ball that slows it down.
Yeah, exactly. So just like the ball rolling over the ground has to follow the laws of motion, so too does blood when it flows through the circulatory system. Now, these two aspects, the energy to put blood in motion is basically the blood pressure. Blood pressure is the force that drives blood flow. The higher the blood pressure, the more the blood flow. The lower the blood pressure, the less the blood flow. Now, on the other side, the blood flow equivalent of the friction that the ground applies to the ball is called vascular resistance. It's how much the walls and the confined space of the blood vessel limit blood flow.
Hmm.
But the vascular resistance and blood flow are directly related to the diameter of the blood vessel. So the wider the blood vessel, the less the resistance and the more blood flow. And the narrower the blood vessel, the more resistance and the less blood flow. Now, this is common sense. Imagine you're sitting in your car driving in rush hour traffic, three-lane traffic. There's cars everywhere whizzing at 70 miles an hour. And down the road, there's been an accident or they're doing your usual construction, right? And there's two lanes blocked, okay? So everyone's got to go from three lanes suddenly down to one lane, okay? There's more resistance and less flow. So it's just common sense. It's obvious, okay?
Yeah.
To recap, more blood pressure and a wider blood vessel means more blood flow, and less blood pressure and a narrower blood vessel means less blood flow. So, okay, now let's answer those questions. When you're constantly changing position, the head with respect to the head with respect to gravity, this is causing your blood pressure and your brain to change too. So if you bend over to work in the yard and you've got your head down for a while, this will make the blood pressure actually rise inside your brain. And if you stand up too quickly, like you just talked about, that'll make the blood pressure drop in your brain. Now, sudden rises or drops of blood pressure in the brain can seriously increase or decrease its blood flow as well, because we just said, right, more blood pressure, more blood flow, less blood pressure, less blood flow. So this can cause the brain to malfunction and even pass out. But through autoregulation, the brain can usually keep its blood flow constant, and so it keeps functioning properly. And this is how it works. When you stand up quickly and the blood pressure and the blood flow in your brain begins to drop, the muscles surrounding its arterioles automatically relax to make them widen, okay? And by doing this, this brings the blood flow back up to normal and compensates for the drop in blood pressure. What do we say? Wider blood vessel means more blood flow. So if your pressure is dropping and there's less blood flow going on, the way to compensate is to widen the blood vessel to open up to allow more blood flow. And when you're standing on your head and the blood pressure and blood flow in your brain rises, the muscles surrounding its arterioles do the exact opposite. They automatically tighten up, making them narrower. So this brings the blood flow back down to normal and compensates for the rise in blood pressure.
Well, Doc, just even on the side here, I know that this whole issue you just described is greatly compounded. It's a topic for another program. But the giraffe with its long neck has a huge heart to make sure blood gets up to the brain. But when they have to lower their head to drink water, there's all this blood flow heading down to the brain, and they have to have very unique mechanisms to adjust the blood flow, as you just described, that goes on with us. So all of us are, all animals particularly, are fearfully and wonderfully made. But if autoregulation is working right, then why do we sometimes get dizzy when we stand up too quickly?
Well, that's a good point, and this is what I think a lot of people forget, okay? Because, Ray, the muscles surrounding the arterioles can relax only so much, okay? And therefore can increase the blood flow only so much. In other words, there are physical limits to autoregulation, okay? So if you stand up too quickly, like you commented earlier on, and it happens to everybody, and your blood pressure drops too low, your brain can't compensate well enough or fast enough. And that's why you can feel dizzy and even pass out. And of course, the sympathetic nervous system, that's a whole other discussion of how it compensates. But to prevent you from getting dizzy in the first place, what a lot of people don't realize is this autoregulation is going on all the time. So it's autoregulation that allows the gymnasts to do their routines without passing out. Now, for the figure skaters, that's the vestibular apparatus, and that's for another time, okay?
Okay. Well, I can see that having enough blood flow to the brain obviously is important for life, but what about the rest of the body? I guess what I'm asking here is, how does the body distribute the blood to where it's needed besides the brain? For example, I've had several trips to the Grand Canyon, and one was a raft trip down the Colorado River. And then one day we took a side hike up a small side canyon. And eventually we got to a spot where the trail narrowed down to about 10 to 12 inches. On one side of that 10 to 12 inches was a vertical rock face, and on the other side of that 10 to 12 inches was a 40 to 50 foot drop. And you had to think, okay, am I going to fight through this and go ahead, or am I going to follow the flight response and turn around and go back to the rafts? Well, I went ahead with it, and you had to go sideways, so you're facing the rock face. You don't have enough space to look at your footing and all that sort of thing. And I'm aware, quite aware, that all my muscles are ready for anything. My body clearly is working hard, even though I'm basically sliding sideways around curves and all sorts of things. And by the time you finish that short little stretch, you're really tired. And so how is the body adjusting to that situation?
Well, Ray, that's quite a story. And, you know, I guess you're lucky is we're our earliest ancestors to, you know, have a body that knew what it was doing when it had to work hard or run away from danger and, you know, be active. So Remember I said that another way the body controls its blood flow is through the sympathetic nervous system, okay? And so with what you're talking about there, the question is, when you're active, the blood has to go to your heart and the muscles, okay? So how does it control that, all right?
Hmm.
And it does this by, the sympathetic nervous system puts out a neurohormone called norepinephrine, all right? And norepinephrine attaches to specific receptors on the muscles surrounding the arterioles and makes them tighten up to limit blood flow. That's what norepinephrine does. So when your body is at rest, doing nothing, I mean completely nothing, not even eating, you're just lying around, I guess, sleeping, the body controls how much blood flow goes to each organ based on its metabolic needs by this norepinephrine. The sympathetic nervous system is set up doing that, okay? Now, interestingly enough, the blood flow to the brain really isn't affected too much by norepinephrine. It's mostly controlled by autoregulation, okay? But now let's go to what you're talking about, all right? When you start to exercise, all right, and you start walking or jogging a bit and then really running, or what you were going through up there, really tightening muscles and working hard, you know, fearing for your life, okay? This triggers the sympathetic nervous system to send out not only more norepinephrine, but also epinephrine. Because you got to remember, if you're active, that's the first thing that has to happen is the blood flow at rest is only about 5 liters a minute coming out of the heart. But when you're active, the body needs more blood, right? Because you're doing more things. It needs more oxygen. So when these hormones are released, norepinephrine and epinephrine, they go to the heart, and it increases its output by a factor of 5, up to about 25 liters a minute.
Wow.
So this fivefold increase in the blood flow goes throughout the whole body. But, like you just said, okay, the whole question what we're talking about is, how did it go where it's supposed to go? When you're holding onto that cliff, that blood has to be going to your muscles or your heart for you to do that, because it's not magic. You just happen to have a heart and muscles, and you do this. No, when you get active, it needs more oxygen. The blood has to go there. It has to supply those tissues with what they need. So the question is, how does it do it? Well, we just said that norepinephrine makes the arterioles in the body contract, which narrows them and reduces blood flow to the tissues. So if you think about it, gee, you're active. There's more norepinephrine going out. By all rights, it should narrow all the arterioles throughout the body and really even reduce the flow of blood everywhere. So what the heck? How does that work? Well, there's two things that happen. First, when you exercise, there's certain chemical changes that occur within the muscles in the heart, skeletal muscle in the heart, just by virtue of them being active. And this makes their arterioles automatically relax to cause more blood flow to them. But the second thing to the nervous system, it just blew me away when, I hadn't really thought about this in a long time until I started writing about this. It just blew me away. Remember we said the sympathetic nervous system sends out norepinephrine, but everyone's familiar with epinephrine or adrenaline, okay? That's the thing that makes your heart, they both make your heart beat, but that's the word that everybody seems to know. That's the hormone they know. Well, interestingly enough, there's specific epinephrine receptors throughout the body, and guess where they are? They're mainly on the arterioles that send blood to the skeletal muscle and to the heart. Nowhere else.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
So what happens is they do the opposite. They have the opposite effect. They make the blood vessels widen. So it offsets the effect of norepinephrine in the heart and the muscles. So basically, those are the two factors. Local chemical changes and the presence of epinephrine receptors on their arterioles that makes it possible for most of this increased blood flow, 5 times normal, to go, and almost 80 or 85% of this increase actually goes right to the heart and the muscles. So, they can do what they need to do. And without that, it's game over. You're falling, 20,000? I don't know how high you were up.
Yeah.
Splat.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm a doctor. We get like that,
Yeah. Well, that really is pretty amazing. And let me just kind of give us a quick summary of what we've talked about here. The body's control of blood flow, first of all, is extremely vital for life. The brain ordinarily uses autoregulation to control the flow of blood. At rest, the body mainly controls blood flow to its other organs through the norepinephrine and the sympathetic nervous system, which you mentioned. And the body uses local chemical changes and the effects of epinephrine on the arterioles in the heart and muscles to make sure that the increase in blood flow during exercise mainly goes to them. So, Doc, given what we've just talked about regarding how the body controls its blood flow, would you like to make any comments about the current explanation for the origin of life by Neo-Darwinism?
Well, Ray, we have to remember that Neo-Darwinism says that despite looking like it was designed, life came about by chance and the laws of nature alone, natural selection acting on genetic mutation. I'd like to clarify here that when we talk about new life forms or new information, it all through genetic mutation, okay? Natural selection doesn't make anything, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is we see this as a common error even within Darwin, certainly within the culture. All natural selection does is preserve what genetic mutation brings about, okay? So that's important to clarify. Anyways, Within this materialistic framework, we're told that random chemicals came together to form biologically significant molecules, which then organized themselves into primitive cells that eventually developed into multicellular organisms like us. You know, so evolutionary biologists point to DNA as having all the information needed for life. So, you know, when it comes to controlling its blood flow, we're expected to believe that somehow or other our DNA randomly acquired all the information to produce all the parts that make up the heart. All the parts that make up the different blood vessels, especially the muscles that surround the arterioles, along with placing norepinephrine and epinephrine receptors where needed. And then, of course, the sympathetic nervous system to produce these norohormones and somehow be connected to the heart and the arterioles. But as we said, each part has to be present or else the system fails. The body can't control its blood flow and it malfunctions and dies. So you really have to wonder, you know, Dr. Mike Behe with his irreducible complexity, you know, you have to wonder how such an intricate system of parts that maintain control of the blood flow could have developed gradually while allowing for life each step along the way, you know. But as hard as this neo-Darwinian narrative is to believe, we have to realize that just trying to explain where all the parts may have come from and how they were assembled in just the right order only tries to answer part of the question about blood flow. I mean, even if they're right, and oh, what a big if, okay? I think Darwin said that, right?
Yeah.
What a big if. But we've got to realize that evolution and biologists have only been trying to explain how life looks, but not how it actually works. So where in our DNA is the information the body needs to know about how blood flow is affected by the laws of nature and how to use this knowledge to control us to stay alive? So like we just said in this talk, how does it seem to inherently know that more blood pressure in a wider blood vessel brings about more blood flow and less blood pressure in a narrower blood vessel brings about less blood flow? Now, evolutionary biologists can't talk about how the body controls blood flow because it's not just about making different parts, which is all what they talk about, or trying to even put them together properly, although this is very important, okay? No, it's really about how when these parts come together, they're able to perform a specific function, a function that allows for life. And frankly, from what I've seen from them, this transcends the neo-Darwinian narrative. In fact, to me, it seems to be not even on their radar. So let's clarify here. It's not just about how arterioles just happen to have muscles surrounding them. It's also about how the ones leading to the brain know when to automatically relax and contract in response to changes in blood pressure to maintain a constant blood flow, or we pass out. And it's not just about how the sympathetic nervous system happens to make these neurohormones, and the arterioles have specific receptors to react to them, okay? It's also about how it knows how to divvy up the blood flow to the different organs to meet their metabolic needs at rest and to cause a fivefold increase in the cardiac output during exercise while making most of it go to where it's actually needed, to the heart and the skeletal muscle. Now, none of these are random actions, okay? They're all examples of the built-in engineering that's absolutely needed for human life. And to me, the only plausible explanation for it is a mind at work that had to had the intelligence to make it, right? You know, so, you know, Ray, this situation reminds me of that scene near the end of The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy's dog, Toto, exposes him from behind the curtain, okay? And we keep seeing that the more we learn about how life actually works, the more we realize that it makes more sense that it's been intelligently designed, right? I mean, common sense sees that. But in trying to make sure that their materialistic worldview isn't questioned, we keep hearing, just like the wizard told Dorothy and her companions, "The great and powerful evolutionists have spoken!" And when it comes to the obvious design of life, just like him, the evolutionists keep telling us, "Pay no attention to what's behind the curtain!" You know, Ray, when it comes to the origin of life, maybe it's time for people to start paying attention to what's back there.
Wow. Well, you know, Doc, I've actually used the great and powerful Oz illustration a few times myself in talking about evolution and how there are some basic secrets that they really don't want to talk about and try to avoid it at all costs. And here come us ID people, and we start bringing them up all the time. Well, they don't care for that too much.
No.
So I'm so glad to have had our discussion today to know how the body automatically controls changes in blood flow as needed. I'm so relieved that I don't have to think about that.
Right.
The body just does it. So our body is truly designed. And so thank you very much, Dr. Glicksman, for being with us today. And this has been ID the Future. I'm Ray Bolin, your host, and thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.